Thank you all for taking the time to this evening, carve out some time and spend with us here. Darlene, I appreciate the library sponsoring this event very much. And let me start with a caveat. And the caveat is, I'm merely a student of this industry. I'm not a computer scientist. I'm not a software engineer. But I know enough to, I think, spend some quality time with you this evening in the topic area. So let me just start with the first slide here. And actually, my first slide is to show you a short video. So let's start with that.
Like many thousands of Jeeps around the world, it can be remotely hacked over the internet through a cellular connection.
You get the volume.
Payment system.
Andy Greenberg, senior writer at Wired, allowed two hackers to remotely control a 2014 Jeep Grand Cherokee that they say hadn't been altered in any way.
Like many thousands of Jeeps around the world, it can be remotely hacked over the internet through a cellular connection to its entertainment system.
Andy Greenberg, senior writer at Wired, allowed two hackers to remotely control a 2014 Jeep Grand Cherokee that they say hadn't been altered in any way while driving on a highway in St. Louis.
So first we're going to turn the fan on him.
Yeah, let's turn the fan on, see if he even notices.
All right, something just turned on, all the fans and AC and stuff. I didn't do that.
The air conditioning is blasting, the music is blasting, and I can't see anything because of the windshield wiper fluid.
Hackers Charlie and Chris say they worked for the last year to develop the software to take over the digital systems in the vehicle.
So we're killing the engine right now.
It says park, it says...
I turned on my hazard lights, but I was still stuck in the right lane with no shoulder to escape onto.
Guys, I'm stuck on the highway.
What
is that? Oh, I think he's panicking.
They say this experiment was done to show how some late model Chrysler vehicles could be exposed to hacks through an internet-connected computer in the dashboard.
We wanted to show that this attack has serious consequences for this vehicle.
We're only two guys with one car, right? So, you know, we can't look at every car, and we want to release this information because more people like us need to be focused on this problem.
Charlie and Chris alerted Chrysler, who is offering a security update at no cost to customers. They released a statement writing, similar to a smartphone or tablet, vehicle software can require updates for improved security protection to reduce the potential risk of unauthorized and unlawful access to vehicle systems. Be sure to watch Inside Edition.
So, here we are in 2019. This was a 2014 vehicle, and remotely.
Every year from now until 2020, there will be an extra 100,000 positions for software engineers that are going unfilled. This is a huge problem that is only getting bigger in the U.S.
There we go. Remotely, thank you. Remotely, we can take control of a motor vehicle. Can we take control of hundreds or thousands? And the answer is yes, which is kind of scary. I want to give you two or three takeaways with this video. Number one is you weren't informed, but I can tell you because I know a little more depth about this particular video. These two individuals that commandeered this Jeep, they wrote an email or a note to Chrysler and said, we found a vulnerability. That's the speak in the cyber world. We found a vulnerability in your system. This is the vulnerability. We would suggest you patch this, fix this. And they got a response back that said, thank you for your note, we'll get to it. Well, a month later, nothing had transpired. They wrote another note and said, we're telling you for the second time about this vulnerability in your vehicle. And they said, yeah, well, thanks for your concern. We'll address it at some point. They wrote a third note and said, if you don't fix this, we're going to go public with this in like the next week. And it took Chrysler less than a week after that threat to send patches to fix this vulnerability. So that's the first takeaway. Second takeaway is, whether it's Chrysler, Kia, Hyundai, Ford, Chevrolet, what are they in the business of doing? Designing, assembling, and distributing motor vehicles. That's their bailiwick. Are they software engineers? Are they cybersecurity experts? You know, how much resources do they put into this? And so you've got a situation where your main mission in life is to build and sell motor vehicles, but yet you're building them with such capacity now. We've all seen the commercials, Wi-Fi hotspots, GPS tracking, right? Let the list go on. We've got all these capabilities coming on to sell these new vehicles with their new conveniences, but yet they're being produced with vulnerabilities because cybersecurity, software security is probably, I'm not an insider, so it's probably an afterthought. So the reason why I started with this title of it's an industry, just kind of look where we're at. My guess is that 20 or 25 years ago, something called cybersecurity wasn't even a line item for many companies' operating budgets. And today, depending on the company, it's a 5, 6, 7 figure line item. So we've gone from zero to pick your number. And people are getting more creative all the time, so I don't see it really tailing off unless something changes rather radically. So let me get this plugged in. Let's start out with some real basic definitions, just to kind of ground you a little bit about the cyber speak in today's world. So there's the cyber crime definition for you. What is this author's definition of a, quote, cyber criminal? And what is this author's definition of cybersecurity? So let's take a look at some of the largest breaches to date. Yahoo, 3 billion user accounts. Of course, Marriott, that just broke in December of 18, 500 million customers. Adult Friend Finder, which I had never even heard of, but it popped up as number three, 412 million accounts. eBay, 145 million. Equifax, 143 million, and so forth and so on. So you can see that we had this breach. They don't call it hacks in the cyber world. It's a breach. We had this breach at Target in 2013. of 110 million, which is kind of alarming. But what's 110 million to 412 million, half a billion, 3 billion? So it's grown in its scope as far as the number of records that have been acquired by this type of activity. Some of the costs, $3.86 million per breach on average is the cost. On average, $141 per stolen record. So just to ground you a little bit, some of this data is not really readily available because investigations are still being carried on and so forth. But the data breach at Target, which happened in 13-14, the latest number I saw was 202 million. So back to my title tonight, this is an industry. When one breach can cost you $200 million, it's something to pay attention to. So who's doing this? Well, it runs the gamut. I start out here in this first bullet called script kiddies. So get away from this notion that people that do cybercrime are just a bunch of bored 20-somethings with hooded sweatshirts on sitting around a laptop and trying to create havoc. Some of that may be true, but that's a very small fraction of really who's involved in this. So script kiddies, meaning that you can download scripts right off of the internet this evening that can be modified to perform some type of malicious activity. I put an asterisk by insiders because you got to realize that the weakest link in cybersecurity is the human, period. Whether it's through a phishing email, insider information, stealing company trade secrets, the weakest link is the human. And so I don't have a statistic that I can directly quote to you because I've read all over the map. But something like 20 to 30% of the information that's been, quote, illegally acquired has come from insiders, people inside the organization. Disgruntled employees, employees about ready to get laid off, don't like your boss, right? Whatever grief you might have, and you decide to use your privileges as an employee to attempt to do damage to your company or your employer. So, you know, that's not something that really should be overlooked. It's not always, the threat is not always coming from outside the organization. It can easily emerge from inside. Cyber terrorists, hacktivist. You know, some people just get their jollies from taking down a website. If I can figure out how to crater Amazon's website for a day or for 4 hours, then I've made my mark. So some people just do it for the thrill. They're not into it for economic benefit. They just want to be able to gloat to their other cyber buddies that, hey, you know what I did? I turned off all the lights in the local Ace Hardware, and they were clueless. They don't want any economic gain. State-sponsored attackers. We've all read about the Chinese and maybe the North Koreans, maybe the Iranians, maybe the Russians. Let me just tell you this. I've been to a couple conferences now where I've been able to talk to some fairly knowledgeable people with the National Security Administration, recently retired. And he told me that I'm going to combine state-sponsored attackers with organized crime. He told me that there were organizations writing malware, and malware is what's used to corrupt computers, steal information, all of that, that would make the R&D department at IBM envious. That international policing agencies, country policing agencies, had been into labs of people writing malware that would be the envy of IBM. Are you with me? They're busting labs in other countries with people that have hardware and software that's the equivalent of some of America's best companies. And all they're doing is writing malware. And so this gentleman went on to tell me that he knows of countries in the old Soviet bloc, he singled out Romania, that states or even criminal organizations, organized crime, they will take a promising young man or young woman who maybe has earned a bachelor's or master's degree in computer science. They will pay for their education to get a terminal degree, a PhD, at an American or other international university. So if you want to go on, if you're from Romania, and you want to go on and get a PhD in computer engineering, the state slash organized crime organization will pay for that for you. They will send you to school and pay for that. As long as when you're out, you know you're obligated to them to write malware to help them get into places like maybe the Department of Defense or the R&D department at General Motors or name your military defense contractor. And so this gentleman went on to tell me that these state slash organized crime type units, they will even go as far as to tell this student working for them that they will take care of their family back in the old country or back in the home country. You know, you write malware for us that gets us into Northrop Grumman or Boeing, and we'll make sure your parents eat well tonight. We'll make sure nobody harasses your siblings. So I'm trying to paint a picture for you that this isn't some group of just radical people with a cause and a computer to play with. This is big boy stuff that comes out, that's produced. Maybe you don't see it with just, you know, an identity theft case, but industrial espionage is an issue. Here's an interesting stat. On average, I put 3 to 9 months because I've read 3 months and I've read 4 months and I've read 9 months. So 3 to 9 months on average before an intrusion is detected. So they've been in your network, the malicious actors as they're labeled in this realm, they have been in your network for 6 months. And you have no clue that they've been there. So let me just give you one case that is kind of scary but accurate. the breach of the Office of Personnel Management that happened, well, it's happened like two or three times, but a couple years ago, the OPM breach. Do you know how they detected that? Do you know how they found out people were in there taking everything from your information if you wanted to do work overseas for the government, if you wanted a classified classification, you wanted to view classified documents. You know how they found that out, that somebody was in their network? Another government agency was working on malware detection security software and said to OPM, we have pretty much perfected this now, why don't you put it on your system? And OPM said, okay. So it was only after OPM put new cybersecurity software on their system that they went, oh my God, somebody's in our system. So who knows how long it would have continued on if they wouldn't have adopted this new software that a sister agency gave to them to put on. So pretty amazing. I'm going to harp on this thing of delays and letting the public know that a company has been breached. But you got to realize that when a major breach occurs, those companies that want to be forthright, they'll come to the podium and they'll say something like, well, we lost 3 million records. Driver's license numbers, social security numbers, names, phone numbers, whatever it is. And you'll notice that there's a pattern that 3 weeks, 2 weeks later, that same company will come to the podium and say, remember we said 3 million? We're just kidding. It's 30 million. And then 2 months after that, they'll come to the podium again and say, remember we said 30 million? We're just kidding you. It's 73 million. And so sometimes it's hard to grasp, sometimes the forensics to figure out exactly what has gone on takes some time. And I can't look any of you in the eye this evening and tell you that even the number that they gave you is accurate. I'm not sure they could tell you it was an accurate number. I think it's probably their best guess at this point in time. One of the things that, as I go through this, working in the College of Business, working with my colleagues, that bothers me from an ethical perspective, you know, it's one thing to be dealing with this cybersecurity stuff and breaches and threats and all that, but what do you think about a president and CEO or other corporate officers that know of a breach, decide not to publicize it for 6 months for whatever reason, but 5 months down the road they sell their stock? Right? They're dumping their stock 2 weeks, 2 months before the public announcement is made. And so we've got a situation where the president, CEO of Intel, sold 49% of his stock 1 week before Intel announced they had been breached. You've got a situation you might have heard of with the Equifax breach, where, I don't know, a handful of corporate officers were selling stock, their stock at Equifax before it was formally announced. So I don't know how much that ties into the whole cybersecurity thing. I wanted to bring it up from an ethics perspective. You know, I do this in my class sometimes just to get them to think a little bit. You know, my guess is that Intel has an entire department somewhere that the title on the door is ethics, the ethics department. And you know, your role model is dumping stock before the bad news hits the fan. So kind of a conflict there. Just me being me. Can we pay off the perpetrators and hope it goes away? Just let me make it go away. The poster child, of course, for that was Uber. Right? They knew they had a breach, major breach. And instead of coming forth and saying, we've got a problem, Houston, they decided to try to cut a check to the hackers. If you don't make this public, they asked the hackers, if you don't make this public and you destroy the data that you've stolen, we'll cut you a check. How'd that work out? Not very good. We all know about Uber's breaches now. It's the supply chain. So I mentioned the OPM case a little bit. Let me mention the bottom bullet and the top bullet briefly. So here we are in 2013. We're all surprised around Thanksgiving of that year that Target's announced they've been breaching tens of millions of credit card information and so forth has been stolen. Any idea how they got in? How did the malicious actors enter the Target system? Well, there was an HVAC company based out of Pennsylvania. It was called Fazio Mechanical. And they had a contract with Target to maintain, troubleshoot, maybe repair coolers. Like, I guess, like you see in the Target store. You go in there, you buy a gallon of milk, right? You go to the cooler. So somebody was able to get the username and password of an employee of Fazio Mechanical. And from there, they were able to enter through Fazio into Target's maintenance module or facilities module. And then once they were in the facilities module of Target, they were able to leap over into what? The accounts receivable side of Target and the accounting end of it. You got to realize that what I just tell you, 3 to 9 months, we don't even know you're in here. So sometimes these people can really just take their time. They're not detected. Nobody even knows you're there. On top of nobody knowing you're there, you have some of the brightest people on the planet going after you, right? They just got their PhD from Stanford, paid by a group in Romania. So are they going to figure out how to get it through Target software? Yeah. My guess is they'll be successful given the time and the resources. British Petroleum was in a conference in Houston. I'm staying with the supply chain theme. Was at a conference in Houston. We had a young lady make a presentation about an offshore oil platform that British Petroleum was designing. In her words, we haven't cut the first piece of steel yet. That is a multi-billion dollar oil platform that BP is building or will build. So this young lady that gave a presentation said that she was in charge of all of the computers, infrastructure, on this oil platform. That was her job. Very bright young lady, super. And so she said, so we've got hundreds of subcontractors working on this oil platform for us. And we began to receive files, input from these contractors, and we noticed at one point that we had a virus in our system. And so we quarantined the virus, got rid of the virus, went on. Within a month, they had another virus. So that was enough for her to say, I want to know where this is coming from. And so they found out it was coming from a subcontractor, i.e. someone in their supply chain. And so she said, I dispatched one of our computer people, IT people, to this subcontractor to find out what was going on. And she said, to our discovery, this subcontractor had zero anti-malware protection on any of their machines, in their company. And so she concluded her comment of, guess what I'm doing now? I'm rewriting all of our contracts for everybody working on this project to prove to us that you are taking the minimal amount of security steps to protect yourself and to protect us as your client. So the question I ponder or I throw out to my students is cybersecurity the quality of the 80s? Meaning that you may recall in the 80s when the United States began to get a lot of pressure, competitive pressure with goods from primarily, you know, the emerging China, but, you know, Japan as much earlier. You know, the U.S. went on a total quality rant. And then over time, what we saw with the quality thing was that once the Fortune 500 or Fortune 1000 companies felt like they had their quality house in order, they worked down the supply chain. They made other companies doing business with them meet minimal quality specifications. And so my question is, are we going to see the same thing with the whole cybersecurity thing? Is Target going to mandate, because, you know, they've got a sore rear end over this, or they're going to say, hey, if you want to do business with us, you need to prove to us that your systems are not being hacked, that you're not sending us malware, viruses, whatever it is. So I think that's what you're going to see going forward. So back to this theme of it's an industry. Let's just say you supply fasteners, nuts, bolts, washers, whatever, and now you're being told by Boeing, if you want to keep supplying fasteners to us, you're going to have to prove that your computer systems are sound and secure. So what do you got to do? You got to go out and hire somebody. New industry, new positions. The Internet of Things. Smart homes, smart vehicles. All opportunities for smart people. Here's the point. Smart ranges, smart security systems, smart refrigerators, smart alarm systems, teddy bears that are connected to the internet that you buy for your kids. It's all breachable. Now, I'm not quite sure, well, I do know, but what you do with a teddy bear, but beyond that, think about this. You can record stuff anyway. Think about this. Are we getting ahead of ourselves? Are we developing smart appliances, smart alarm systems that are littered, stuffed with vulnerabilities? Can it, in other words, can it be breached? Can it be hacked? And what's the liability of that? You know, you want the convenience of having a smart oven. What if somebody decides that they can get into your home and turn your oven up to 600 degrees when you're not there and perhaps set your house on fire? Are you with me? So where do you want to go? How smart do you want to be? And what vulnerabilities might you have from all this smart gadgetry around you? So I threw down here this term called botnets. There's another area that I could go into it with you on. Let me just kind of scratch the surface. Anything that's internet connected, I got to watch my phrases. Most things, most all things that are internet connected can be breached. And that processor can be harnessed to do malicious things. So I brought up the case of the smart appliances. Take a look at this, if I can get it up. A refrigerator was detected sending out 750,000 emails. A refrigerator. Has sent out 750,000 spam emails. So just play with this in your mind for a minute. What if I could harness the processors of every smart LG appliance? I'm trying to think of the modern ones that might have it. What if I could have every LG smart appliance start sending out spam emails? And going back, what if all those appliances honed in on one website? What if I could have 25 million LG ranges and refrigerators at the same time dial into pick your company? I would take them down. They would be unable to handle that scale and scope of penetration. I would take them down. So that's this whole thing of botnets. I can take you down, I can harness the power, and so forth. Anyway, so it used to be that the refrigerator was where you kept your spam. You're wrong. It's where you send your spam. It's the source for your spam. And I noted that this was, when I looked this up, this was January of 2014. Where are we at? We're in April of 19. That first clip I showed you, that was of a 2012 Jeep. Where are we at? 2019? So what has transpired and what is transpiring? I mean, we're 5-6 years down the road from that. IT versus OT. One of the things I've picked up on both by just studying it and attending a conference or two, is that thankfully you've got some kind of line of demarcation, if you will. And on the IT side, the information technology side, you have the business functions, the accounting, the marketing, maybe some R&D, that type of thing. But when you jump over to the, quote, OT side, that's an area called operating technology. And that's something that you and I, just picking up the local newspaper, never really read about or hear about. But let me tell you, there's people in this country that sleep very short hours and very lightly with this thing of operating technology. So it's one thing to always think, well, is it ransomware? Is it ID theft? Is it this? Is it that? What would happen if someone was to take down a refinery? What would happen if someone was to take down a portion of the national electrical grid? What would happen if someone had the capability to shut down all the water treatment plants on the East Coast? Right, let your mind run free. So, to me, that's the real threat. Yes, it's very uneasy, uncomfortable, inconvenient to have somebody have your driver's license number on the internet. But as far as a societal condition, if you can't get fresh water for a week, or you have no electricity for a week, or something of that magnitude happens, that's a whole lot different than somebody having your birthday somewhere, at least in my thought. So on this thought of infrastructure, of course, it's been theorized that the United States teamed up with Israel and caused some havoc with the centrifuges in Iran a few years ago. None of that's ever been admitted to. Ukraine, the Russians hacked the a portion of the electrical grid in Ukraine and shut off electrical power to about 300,000 people for some period of time. And I've actually watched some videos of Ukrainian electrical power operators that can speak English, or rough English, and they're saying, yes, we went over to pull a switch, and as soon as we'd pull it down, it would pop back up. And so they had to go to like each little substation, each little neighborhood, disconnect the software, manually throw down the switch finally to figure out how to get some power flowing. An industrial furnace in Germany, hackers hacked into that to the tune of millions of dollars. They didn't want any ransom. They didn't want any money. They wanted to make a political statement. So they ruined a several million dollar furnace remotely. Water treatment plant in New York. You know what the FBI told them? Pay the ransom. I don't know why, but that's what the FBI's advice was. Pay the ransom. So apparently they were hacked to the point to where certain processors were adding too much chemicals, not enough chemicals to treat water. And instead of, investigating it, pardon the pun, making a federal case out of it, the FBI said, just go ahead and pay the ransom. Either that or start fresh, get rid of all your control systems and start fresh, which maybe they didn't have the time to do. So I asked this gentleman I met with for the National Security Agency, I said, gosh, I got to share with you some paranoia. you talking about all this industrial hacking. I said, what about nuclear power plants? That kind of sends a chill up my spine. And he said, you know, he said, fortunately for us, a lot of our nuclear power plants are old. And they were installed with analog technology versus digital technology. And analog technology is much harder to hack or breach or modify. So I guess it's a saving grace we haven't built a nuclear power plant in a few years, because that might be hackable. I know. It's hard to weep, feel a great deal of empathy for the banks. I mean, they're the banks. But this whole thing of cybersecurity has slapped them pretty good. A friend of mine, actually my supervisor, is a former president and CEO of First Interstate Bank here in town, and I've had some coffee conversations with him on this topic. He tells me things like, you know, Brian, we get as many as 10,000 probes a day. Are you with me? We get as many as 10,000 probes per day. 10,000 people or computers or software actually trying to find out if there's a vulnerability in First Interstate's software somewhere. Somebody's touching it. Somebody's trying to worm their way into it. Somebody's trying to figure out, you know, how fast a window would change or whatever, you know. If there is there a vulnerability? They get 10,000 of those per day. And this is First Interstate. Can you imagine Citibank or Wells Fargo or anybody of that scale and magnitude? Businesses do not invest in protection if the banks will cover them. Hot topic. Hot topic. I mean, the banks are in a position to where they're having to cover billions of dollars of fraud, and they're covering it for companies that maybe haven't paid that much attention to protecting their systems. I mean, why would you go out and spend $1 million on security software where if you get breached and the customer gets mad, the bank's going to run up to them and say, well, we'll make you whole. We'll take care of it. So is there a disincentive, maybe, for companies to get aggressive when at this juncture of time, the banks have a reputation and have a track record of covering losses, at least for consumers, individual consumers? So, First Interstate Bank received less than 10%. So, you got to remember, First Interstate Bank, even though they're a major institution in our region, I was told that they recovered less than 10% of the monies that went to Target during that period where that breach was occurring. So it's not like they can go back and say, well, wait a minute, Equifax, can't you cut me a check that's 6 or 7 or 8 figures? No, they're not going to do that. So just to give you some idea again about the theme of industry, one of our former students, Dr. Hill probably knows him, one of our former students got a job at First Interstate in their cybersecurity area. First Interstate has a cybersecurity area. As far as I know, they have at least, my information's a year old. They have at least four people working full-time in cybersecurity at First Interstate Bank. So how many people do you think Wells Fargo or Citibank or Chase Bank, name your bank, name your investment bank on Wall Street, how many people do you think are working in cybersecurity there today? It's got to be in the thousands. New industry. Whole new industry. Legal interest. Interesting. I'm picking at this scab with my students. From what I can recollect, when the Target breach became public, you didn't hear anything about, well, we're going to sue them, or we're going to go after them, we'll see them in court. You didn't hear that. At least I didn't hear that. So go back to December of 2018, 4 months ago. Within 24 hours, the first class action lawsuit was filed against Marriott. And by the way, do you know how they did it? Botnets. They had refrigerators, I'm being facetious, but true. They had refrigerators sending out a brief questionnaire that would appear like as a pop-up on your screen asking you if you had ever stayed at a Marriott or a Marriott-labeled property. And as soon as you said yes, they threw your name in the hopper as a claimant in a class action lawsuit. We'll be in touch with you shortly, but all we need right now is your name to add to our list for a class action lawsuit. So, it's going to be interesting to watch how the legal industry gets some traction now and realizes maybe there's money to be made here. You know, if I can go after Target, I can go after Marriott, I can go after Yahoo, I can go after Facebook, you know, whoever it is. Are the lawyers going to be sniffing around to maybe try to get a piece of that action? My guess. Attacks using social engineering. So I played around with a couple of these slides this morning. And I have a young lady, actually she's about 65. She's been with St. V's for like 35 years. She's retiring. Real spitfire of a lady, fun to have in class. I was talking about this topic this morning to the class broadly, and she says, do you know what happened to me? And she was talking to another gentleman over here, and I'm just kind of eavesdropping on the whole conversation. She says, I got a call one night from someone that said my granddaughter was in jail, and she had a DUI. And they knew my grandmother, they knew my granddaughter's name, they knew her age, they knew that she lived in Florida, they knew everything. They knew me, they knew my phone number, they knew everything. And they asked me to send $1,000 to somewhere or someone. So I see a couple of you shaking your head. That is part of the whole, let me go back, that is part of the whole social engineering piece of this. So remember what I told you, The weakest link is the human. And if I can get you to react to something, i.e. send money, the children are dying in a flood in somewhere. If I can send you a text message that says, Bob, oh, I'm sorry, I do have a Bob here. Bob, we see that you've been into some seedy websites. If you'll just send us $500, we won't bother to send that information to your family. Right? So they're playing this whole social engineering thing, and they get a lot of money from it. Urgent plea for help, unexpected email. I've got one other quick movie I want to share with you, just to give you some reinforcement or gravity of what this is like. I want to caution you ahead of time. I got permission from our library director to play this. It does have one word in it that I always caution my students on, so I'll caution you.
So I invited a few of the world's best hackers to try to hack me and show me where my vulnerabilities are. And now I'm going to meet them in Las Vegas for DEF CON, the biggest hacker convention of the year. They're going to hack me using social engineering, which is essentially hacking without any code. They just use a phone and an internet connection.
You want to do a sample phishing call?
What's phishing?
Phishing is voice solicitation. And basically what you do is you use the phone to extract information or data points that can be used in a later attack.
Let's do it. Who are you going to call?
Maybe I'll call your cell phone provider and see if I can get them to give me your email address.
I bet they're good. I bet they have my back. But yeah, go for it.
I'm going to spoof from your number, so it's going to look like it's calling from you.
Okay.
Hi, I'm so sorry. Can you hear me okay? I'm sorry. My husband's like, we're about to apply for a loan and we just had a baby, and he's like, get this done by today. So I'm so sorry, I can't call you back. I'm trying to log into our account for uses information, and I can't remember what email address we used to log the account. The baby's crying, and can you help me? Awesome.
In just 30 seconds,
at gmail.com,
Jessica gets access to my personal email address.
Now, if I needed to add our older daughter on our account so she could call in and make changes, how would I need to go about doing that? You would have to send me a secure PIN through a text message? Yeah. Well, the thing is, I don't think I'll be able to receive a text message if I'm on the phone. Oh, I'm not on there either? So I thought when we got married, he added me to the account.
Jess uses my girlfriend's name and a fake social security number.
5127.
To set up her own personal access to my account.
Wait, I'm sorry. So there's no password on my account right now? Can I set that up?
She even gets the support person to change my password.
Thank you so much for your help today.
So she just basically blocked me out of my own account.
I'll get her fed after this. All right. Thank you.
Holy shit. So they just gave you access to my entire cell phone account.
You're gonna have to go on and change your password now because it's Jess, my name.
And all it took was a crying baby and a phone call.
Yes.
Well, this is YouTube. Was this staged for a YouTube recording? The answer is yes, of course. Ask yourself, can this happen? Does this happen? Is this feasible? By a long shot. Think of this. You've got some grumpy customer service manager walking up and down the aisle saying, remember, the customers come first. The customer's always right. Take care of the customer. Right? You don't want that. You don't want the customer to go to your supervisor. That's a black mark. You'll do anything, including changing passwords and whatever else. So just note that aspect of it. So we come to the point where I want to close. And so with all of my study, all of my reading, I've read this now three or four places. If you want to protect yourself to around the 85th percentile, if you want to have 85% protection, these are the steps you should consider doing. And before I get into the steps, remember, my first slide, one of my first slides was the definition of a, quote, cyber criminal. We'll take the cyber off of it. How many people would just go for the low-hanging fruit? Right? They'll go for the most vulnerable, the most easy. So if I can't breach your firewall, or you can have a 16-digit password, or, you know, they will just move on. It's too much of a pain to go after you. So keep that in mind. So here's some tips for you just to ponder. Pay attention to your security patches and updates. So if you have Windows, let's say, and you get a note that says we have, sometimes they're called service packs, of which security might be a piece of it. We need to update your service patch or your security. First of all, hover your mouse over that message to make sure it is really Microsoft.com. And do that. I can tell you that I had a gentleman in my class that was a Air Force veteran, and he told me that, he took my class, he told me that when he was in the Air Force, it was mandatory that all security patches received were installed and verified to be installed within 48 hours. No questions asked. So pay attention to your security patches and updates. Purchase anti-malware. I realize that you can go on the web nowadays and download free anti-malware from AVG and a plethora of others. What I've read is that they only give you about 40%, 50% of the protection of their paid version. Surprise! Right? And so I'll just tell you personally, I think we pay $50 a year for the full-blown anti-malware on our machine, which includes a firewall and so forth. So at least do the free download if you haven't. And you can go to anywhere, Geek Squad, you know, Best Buy, maybe like Radio Shack. You can go anywhere. In fact, you can probably just Google, you know, what's the best malware. So I would suggest you do that. Strong passwords. So the National Institutes of Standards and Technology, NIST, in the last couple months came out with a new recommendation for passwords. And believe it or not, they recommend 16-character passwords. Right. I'm going to remember that. Right? Did the exclamation point become before the question mark? Did I put a numeral here or a letter here? Was the letter underscore or capitalized or right? Who's going to remember that? And so I might suggest you look at an online password generator where you memorize one complex password and it will generate complex passwords for you, for whoever you do business with. So I can have a unique 16-character password just for Amazon or eBay or whoever. So you might consider moving in that direction. Wash your URLs. There's a phenomena, at least one, called typo squatting, which basically means I might change the letter, a letter, delete a letter, add a letter, and a URL, and it might take you to a site where you automatically download malware on your machine. So be careful of the URL that you're typing in. If you use public Wi-Fi, consider subscribing to a VPN. I see them anywhere from $3.33 a month up to maybe $8 or $9 a month. I just threw $5 in there. It's an encryption device, encryption software, so that if you're sitting in the middle of City Brew and you're dialed into your bank, it's all encrypted. So nobody next to you or within City Brew's IT department or whatever can see that you're sending information to, you know, Western Security Bank, or you're querying your account at your broker and so forth. So back to the whole industry thing, I'm telling you to buy malware software, right? I'm telling you to subscribe to a VPN. It's all money. For a home Wi-Fi network, configure the router to Wi-Fi protected access to WPA2 personal. As I was preparing to come back to school tonight to talk to you, a couple things dawned on me. I had a student tell me one time that she had Wi-Fi access in her apartment. And then she giggled and said, yeah, I use my neighbor's. So, no, that's the, you know how creative students can be. The other thing that I'll mention on the Wi-Fi thing is you can set up a router, an integral part of your home Wi-Fi system. The router comes with a series of default settings from the factory. And you may or may not recall, there was a major political figure about 3 years ago who had a Wi-Fi system installed in his home in Washington, D.C., and he didn't change any of the default settings. And one key default setting was the password to get into the Wi-Fi system. And the default setting was what? Password. So he was hacked by somebody just typing in password. So there you go. So you want to change your password from something other than the default of password. Finally, consider subscribing to an online offsite data backup service. If you are ever the victim of a ransomware type of event where somebody comes in and freezes your computer or tries to destroy your hard drive or other malicious behavior, if you have important documents, information about yourself, your family that, you know, you want preserved, you might consider storing that somewhere else, off-site preferably. The recommendation is off-site in case of disasters such as fire and that type of thing. So consider that option. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Questions? I wouldn't say it was worth the price of admission. Since it was free, it was worth the price of admission. Thank you. Thank you. Yes, sir.
What about the dependability of antivirus malware software such as
You want to know how I would rate Kaspersky Labs software, any malware software? Well, I'm not going to target Kaspersky Labs. I know they're out there. I can only tell you this, and this is something for all of you to think about. Any malware software no matter who it is. The problem is they are addressing software or viruses that are known. Right? That's why they've got the anti-malware software. They've seen this virus. They know its code or key pieces of its code and how it works. And so they've developed a system that disables it. So the thing about anti-malware software is that you're always looking in the rearview mirror. So you don't know what the next virus is going to be. Again, you know, you've got people writing code that Kaspersky will only address as part of their anti-malware package a year from now. But it's out there now. So that's kind of a weakness. As far as any kind of rating or ranking, you can go to, you know, Wired or PC World or Computer World and see where a particular anti-malware program ranks. I don't think I can or should endorse any particular product. You know, do your own research. It's all pretty good. It's all pretty good. Some are better than others. But just watch the free stuff. If it's free, it's, you know how life is. If it's free, it's worth taking a long look at. Anybody else? No? Well, thank you all for coming. Have a wonderful evening.